So, goes a little something like this. Wrestling with autism, it isn't easy, but it is my mission. Gonna put my symptoms in a submission and make them all tap out. Yeah.
Nice.
So I have some improvised lyrics for a theme song for Wrestling with Autism. If people like it and have said skills to put audio musical tracking behind it and make it sound cool, yeah, maybe we'll use that. If not, I've also come up with a few for specific episodes, so maybe I'll have multiple songs. Who knows? We'll just have fun with it. Hi, I'm Kobe Feldman.
And I'm Mike Bellaroo.
And this is Wrestling with Autism. This is a new podcast that I came up with the idea of. I've noticed a large cross-section when it comes to people on the autism spectrum, autists, whatever you want to call them, and wrestling fans. And so I sought out my friend Mike to start this podcast. So first off, we're going to start with our relationship with autism. I was diagnosed just before my 18th birthday, there was a lot of debate. Some people said Asperger syndrome. Some people said mid-functioning autism. Now, it doesn't seem like those titles matter as much. We're finding functionality isn't really the great judgment of how your symptoms affect you. It's just been a learning experience since then.
Okay, and my experience, my relationship with autism is, I have a few things about me that make me wonder, whether or not I am somewhere on the spectrum. For example, I have a very hard time keeping and maintaining eye contact. My oldest son, who is going to be 9 years old this year, was officially diagnosed as autistic. Yeah, he's a blast to be around, you know.
One thing I noted, and there is a debate within the autism community about self-diagnosis. I am very in the middle about it because, in part of my age range, people our age, I don't know your age exactly. I'm 34, so. When I was diagnosed just before my 18th birthday, I was actually the first person in my school ever diagnosed with Asperger syndrome. My mom actually had to bring pamphlets to teach the special ed administration of our school what Asperger's was. That is how rare the diagnosis was, and that was only 17 years ago. So I believe there are a lot of people who weren't diagnosed because of the time frame, not because they don't fit the criteria. Mm-hmm. There is the issue. Some people are saying, well, if everyone is self-diagnosing, then that kind of takes the power away from people who it's so prevalent that it was easily noticeable. And, like, say example, a celebrity going, "Oh, I was never diagnosed, but I consider myself autistic." It kind of takes away from the challenges of people who actually needed the diagnosis to get through certain parts of life. And if it's not impacting you enough to get a diagnosis, then self-labeling can take away from other people. I don't personally believe that. I think it's so new, we kind of can't be that judgmental about it.
Right.
I'm totally fine with people self-diagnosing, self-whatever. No one ever knows you better than yourself. It's just a matter of if you're going to label yourself and be part of a community, you should be a part of that community.
Yeah.
That's the important part. I think more important than who can and can't say what is, if you're going to self-identify, learn what other autistic people are talking about, what's important to them, what's important to the community as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't care about self-diagnosing.
Yeah.
And I rant a lot. That is a very normal part about autism. I am asexual, but I get off on tangents. yeah, just a little bit more about me. Maybe I'll splice this into earlier. I'm 34. I am agender. I present male. Don't identify as such. Asexual. Just.
I think I'll be 36 this year.
Jeez. Yeah, I stopped counting.
So, yeah, I am. I definitely identify as male, and my wife likes to describe me as being very straight but very comfortable with my sexuality.
That's fair. This is another thing. When I talk about, I want to make this clear. This is, you know, a nice big thing up front. When I talk about autism and how it affects me, I'm talking about how it affects me. When I'm talking about being asexual or agender, I'm talking about me. I'm not an expert on anything. I am in no way an expert. I know what I've experienced and I've known what I've heard, but in no way am I trying to speak for a larger group. I'm trying to speak to my experiences and hoping it speaks to the larger group.
Mm-hmm.
So like, for example, I'm asexual. But attractiveness, I see it. I mean, this is a nice jumping off point. We're talking about wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bunch of hot guys and hot women. And there's no denying that's part of the appeal for me. You know? I talk about my sexuality like I'm a dog chasing cars. I love looking at it, and for a while I even thought going after it was good. I've learned that if I was to get someone, I wouldn't know what to do, and I wouldn't want to do anything. I have no interest in that part. I think cars look cool. That's basically the way I see it. And that is one of the many things that draws me to wrestling. Let's get into our relationship with wrestling.
All right.
I literally do not remember a time when I wasn't a wrestling fan. My earliest memory, and this ties into the autism wonderfully, one of my earliest memories was playing with my action figures, and they were Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior. And because I was, at this point, probably about 6, I didn't understand slang and euphemisms at all. And that is normal with autistic kids. So when I saw on wrestling Hulk Hogan said, "Well, let me tell you something, brother," I thought Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior were brothers. And I thought it was wrong that they were fighting each other. Like, this is how much I thought about it. So with my action figures, Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior did not fight each other. I was 6. I don't know how I got this idea in my head. They lived in an apartment and were roommates and had a detective agency.
Sweet.
I don't know where I got that idea. Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen weren't even a thing yet. But I was that certain they were actually brothers and brothers shouldn't fight, and so they are going to have a detective agency. That is my earliest memory.
Wow.
So that is how much wrestling has played into my life.
All right. I gotta say, wrestling has not played into my life a whole heck of a lot. I remember being at my grandma's house, and you get the broadcast television, you get three channels, and you have to go up and click the knob over to whatever channel you wanted to get. And the reception was iffy at best, and sometimes all you got was wrestling. And so the only matches I remember watching, you know, involved Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
And that's the only character I can remember from back then.
Wow.
And
you've got a lot of work to do.
Oh, you know what? You know what? I do know Andre the Giant because
that's,
of the Princess Bride.
Well, yeah. And there are probably a few other people who, like Ric Flair, you might know of.
Yeah,
no? Maybe. Wow. Oh, we've got so much work to do. So, yeah, part of this podcast, as a way of jumping into this, and I will fully admit that I am... got this idea from another podcast, WrestleSplania. One of the inspirations for me wanting to do this is a wrestling fan showing a new wrestling fan the ropes. That was unplanned. Just like, and later I'm gonna have to do this because now I'm saying it out loud. I improvised a theme song a couple days ago that I will have to sing so we can put it at the beginning.
Okay.
And I just made it up, and I'm thinking about doing a theme song for every episode. I have a few. This can be edited out.
Yeah.
So yeah, we have a lot to cover. So I will be helping kind of reintroduce him to wrestling, show him what I love about wrestling, show him what appeals to me. If he becomes a wrestling fan, great. If not, also great. Not everything's for everyone. I'm also a very firm believer in there's not a wrong way to like something. This is something we're going to have to interact with a little bit because, oh gosh, how can I describe wrestling fans? Wrestling is so eclectic. I mean, it's like any other fandom. In general, if you find a pocket of fandom where you find people who think similarly to you, it feels like you found the best friends of your life. Those are not the people you're going to hear from the most often. The people you're going to hear from most often are gatekeepers, people who think they know the best, that they know what it makes wrestling, that they know what is important about wrestling, and if you like the other stuff, you're dumb. There are a lot of those in wrestling. I hate those people. I'll backtrack a little. I hate that way of thinking.
Oh.
Because one thing I've really liked about wrestling that I've really discovered over the last few years, I was a pure WWE fan until a couple years ago. Then I discovered there's indie wrestling, there's Japanese wrestling, there's all the different flavors. They're less accessible. They're not going to be on cable TV. They're harder to find, but they're out there. There is something for everyone, so why we have to limit who is and isn't a fan doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
If someone wants to cheer for the hot guy because he's the hot guy, go ahead, cheer for that guy. I don't care.
Yep.
So yeah, I do not truck with gatekeeping.
All right.
So whatever you get out of wrestling or don't get out of wrestling is fine with me. I've introduced people to wrestling who end up liking the exact opposite of the things that I like. That's fine. We can all enjoy stuff. Now I'm just talking in circles.
Well, I can tell you from what we watched just now, I think one of the things that I will like about wrestling is commenting for the characters. That's what I like to do that with movies that I've liked that I've seen 100 times. You know,
wonderful.
Insert comments, and I didn't want to do it too much while we were watching because I didn't know how you would feel about.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I was trying to also not do that so you could take it in. This
mm-hmm.
is for people listening. What we watched as preliminary for the first episode. I'm hoping that each episode after this will have themes. This one was just an introduction to wrestling and storytelling in wrestling, which I chose the two best matches for that at the same show, War Games last November, Velveteen Dream versus Aleister Black, and the War Games match. And I think those do a great job of showing the range of storytelling. One is so story-based, it kind of doesn't matter what moves they're doing in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about say his name.
Yep.
And this stoic character who doesn't want to give in. And then there's War Games, where it is all about the crazy carnage in the ring.
Yep.
So it's different types of storytelling. And in the end, that's what wrestling is. It's storytelling. But yeah, feel free to make comments and all that. I'm disabled and spend all day at home. I spend that entire time playing the wrestling video game and watching TV. It keeps me sane.
That's important.
Right. So I usually, when I'm playing that video game, though, I keep the volume of the game muted, and I'm those color commentators. Those guys, oh my god! What in storytelling is basically a Greek chorus.
Okay.
They are filling in the gaps that the main characters aren't telling you with this overarching, oh, this guy's been wrestling for this long, you can really feel it. You can feel it, and you know, you look at it and you're like, I can't feel it. But that guy says I can feel it, so I can feel it. It's a Greek chorus kind of effect. So I do that with my wrestling video game all the time. So any fun comments you want to throw in while watching, that's fine.
We're having fun with this.
yeah, it's all about having fun, because there is a lot to dislike about wrestling, too. I know you're like-minded in this. I am a very politically liberal person. And let's not hide the fact that the wife of the CEO of WWE is on the Trump administration. Linda McMahon is the head of the Small Business something association, stuff that I don't care about because I'm poor. Donald Trump is in the WWE Hall of Fame. He was involved in a few things. And then, of course, the fact that this has always been stereotypically a rednecky, southern, conservative atmosphere. Oh, it's two guys punching each other, wrestling, you know? So a lot of people involved are from the South, are conservative. There are wrestlers with problematic histories of domestic violence or things like that. Ronda Rousey's now a wrestler, and she's a TERF and a Sandy Hook truther. Yeah.
I did not know that.
That's another thing, is you start realizing these things. You're basically inviting a new level of celebrity into your life.
Mm-hmm.
And just like with real celebrities, some of them are going to let you down.
Yeah.
So there's that aspect of wrestling. I have gotten to this point where I kind of actively care about that in the wrestlers that I cheer. Not as much in the... Not as much in the businesses that I'll go to, because you can't really escape a conservative wrestling company. Even if their product isn't conservative, the people who run those companies usually are.
Mm-hmm.
So it colors who my favorite wrestlers are and who my lesser favorite wrestlers are. But it's also a matter of, like, if you're a sports fan, there are a lot of dumbass athletes out there that are flat earthers. That's a big thing in wrestling now too. There's a lot of flat earth wrestlers, and there's a lot of idiot athletes, and a lot of athletes with violent issues, and you kind of learn to work around it. Like, if there's one person on the team you like who with a domestic violence history, you don't stop liking the entire team.
Yeah.
You kind of have to find your own lines.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a lot of information to give you when you just watched your first matches. I'm trying to do this overarching thing, and you're brand new to this, so I'm trying to overwhelm you. I'm just explaining where I'm at right now.
Mm-hmm.
There once was a time where I'd be like, the best performer in the ring is my favorite wrestler. And it's like, well, there's, like, that comes from the same gatekeeping mindset where, well, that means I have to have an established idea of what the best wrestler is, which means that I'm discounting a bunch of other people's opinions without trying. So while trying to find a new metric for who to cheer and who not to cheer,
mm-hmm.
political agreement helps.
Yes. I agree. I don't have a whole lot to say on that.
Yeah,
but, I
this
mean,
is
you're,
a
you're
lot
not,
of... So... Let's get into the meat and potatoes of the matches. Velveteen Dream and Aleister Black, what'd you think?
First off, you had explained to me prior to actually starting the match that that there was storytelling to be had here, and that was the first took me by surprise because I haven't seen wrestling
right.
in my adult life, so.
Yeah, it's funny because when I was a kid in the 80s when Hulk Hogan was around, my dad was really into wrestling. He's the one who got me into wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Then they kind of steered into this story where story was more important than the wrestling. And that drove my dad away from wrestling and made me go, oh, this is actually really good. So that's an example of you can't expect someone to like the same things as you when you introduce them to something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the storytelling.
So that was immediately obvious when they, you know, prior to the start of the match, they go through a little bit of the history between the two. And they did a really good job. You could, you know, see the buildup. Velveteen Dream?
Yes.
What, you know, wants this black person to say, hey, I don't mean black person, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Because that would be the other way around.
Yeah.
Anyways. Wants Mr. Black to say his name for, like, I guess that's his way, you know, I've made it, I'm a real wrestler now.
Yeah, it's a matter of respect. It starts, Velveteen Dream is very new, especially to the WWE. He's been a professional wrestler for 3 years. That's it. I think he's 22.
Mm-hmm.
Aleister Black, and this is a trend with wrestlers being signed by WWE now, is that he's been wrestling around the world for 20 years.
Ooh.
He, like, I'm pretty sure he got started as a teenager. And this is the way things were for a long time. WWE got very into, we're going to make our own wrestlers. And then people are like, well, they're not as good. And then they're like, oh, well, then those people who've been working for 20 years that we refuse to sign because they worked somewhere else first, now we're going to bring them in. That's happening now. So the idea of this new guy trying to get this established veteran just to say his name, and this was also a kind of, it wasn't too much before this match that he started going by the name the Velveteen Dream.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, he hadn't really been on TV. His name was Patrick Clark. He was just going by his actual name, which is what a lot of wrestlers do until they find their, like, real character.
Mm-hmm.
So he shows up as Velveteen Dream, and this other guy's like, no, you're Patrick.
You're Patrick.
You're Patrick. I know you're Patrick. I'm not going to call you the Velveteen Dream. That is such a pretentious... Even for a wrestler, that is a pretentious name. And it's just about earning respect. Like, you can tell one guy's a good guy, kind of an anti-hero, good guy-ish. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm pretty sure Aleister Black actually has anti-hero tattooed across his knuckles.
Mm-hmm.
And then Velveteen Dream is this cocky, arrogant guy who wants respect he hasn't earned, but only because we haven't seen that he hasn't earned it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I love the stories.
Yeah. And it was a good match. And like you had said earlier, it ended up being so much about the story that the moves that they were doing in the ring weren't all that important. They were interspersed with moments of their character, like Aleister flipping over the ropes and then, you know, going right into the sitting position, and that's what he does. That's his thing.
Yeah.
And then Velveteen responding in kind, and then Aleister comes back responding the way that Velveteen would respond to Aleister Black, and it was fun.
Yeah, and it's the extra added layers, like, just like with any action movie, anything. Would Guardians of the Galaxy 2 have been as compelling if the bad guy wasn't the main guy's dad?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about these personal relationships. It's about how you tell the story. It's not about the big climactic fight if you haven't built it up.
Right.
And that's really what I love about wrestling is sometimes that build up, like that match, it's like a month of build up. Some matches, there's going to be stuff I'm going to show you that's like years of build up. That it's, and you know, some stuff it pays off, some stuff it's like, oh, this looks like it's not going to pay off, so we're going to punch this story. That's part of the fun of, especially with WWE, is they have numerous weekly shows, and they, with social media, they can see how people are reacting to things and change as be, you know, change as needed, which is going to be a big part of the next episode we watch, The Legend of Daniel Bryan,
okay.
Which is going to be so good that I, yeah.
Excellent.
But yeah. I love Velveteen Dream. I'm wearing a Velveteen Dream shirt right now. I saw him live in St. Paul, and let me tell you, you have not heard a small stadium go nuts until you've seen a wrestler who is basically Prince in Minnesota. Holy crap. Like, he could have not said a word, and we would have been eating out of his hand. And it's original. It's there's been this kind of skew with wrestling where too outlandish a story you can't do. You've got to have some level of realism. And he just kind of goes, no, I'm going to do what I want, and I'm going to own it so well that it doesn't matter how outlandish it is. And that's one of my favorites. He's quickly becoming one of my favorites. Then the other match we watched, the War Games match, totally different feel.
Yes, completely different. It was interesting because they still showed a little bit of the history and whatnot. So I got to see they showed the history of. I'm forgetting the team names now.
Yeah,
there's the Pretty
Boy
team.
Two matches. Undisputed Era.
Undisputed Era. And they had a match with someone previously, and they had offered him
Roderick Strong.
Yeah, and he.
I'm just clarifying for the podcast, not for you. You take your time getting to know it. I'm telling the fans. I don't care what you do or don't know.
So he betrayed Undisputed Era, and so then to see him be the, you know, the first pick to be in the cage. It was super interesting to me already, not knowing much about the history of everything here, but it was interesting to see that be the first pick because you've got three people in a cage, and you got two people who are definitely going to be bad guys, you know, for each other, and then there's this third person. He's, you know, what is he gonna do? You know, how is this gonna work out? Are these two gonna, you'll play nice with each other while they take down Undisputed Era guy, Possum guy.
as I mentioned, I heard this. I think I heard it on WrestleSplania, but they were taking it from someone else, so this is already like third degree quote. But Adam Cole is the prettiest possum in the Denny's dumpster. He looks, and that's not even like a negative. Like, he just has possum facial characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of greasy, but he's very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
He is a very pretty, pretty boy.
Mm-hmm.
But
he's got the hair toss.
But he's got the hair toss. But he's also got this kind of mischievous rodent thing to him that. Kyle O'Reilly, I think, who is also in the Undisputed Era, he was the guy who swung the chair and hit the rope and it bounced back and hit himself in the face. And he is so good at doing that I am a greasy rodent look.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just, it can be so much fun to watch. You don't want the good guy and the bad guy to be... You don't want to watch Captain America versus Red Skull every single movie.
Mm-hmm.
You want some variation. You need different types of bad guys.
Yep.
There's the big, powerful bad guys who dominate. There's the greasy weasels who sneak by.
Mm-hmm.
And they are just so good at that.
And sometimes the villain of the story is someone who has been on your team.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes... it's... this. I don't think there's so few friendships in wrestling where someone hasn't turned on the other at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is high drama.
Yeah.
Your friends are the people you think you can trust the most, so they're the most likely to betray you in this scenario. I think we might have to do an episode on... there's one wrestler, Kevin Owens, who is a great wrestler, and I think in... like the last 5 years of his wrestling career has had about four different best friend other wrestlers who they are his best friend for a while, things get along, they hit a snag in the road, Kevin Owens ends up throwing him under the bus for his own success. And this keeps happening and people don't learn because he's so good at the, even though he's a hateable guy, he's a villain, he is the only care about himself. He's a prize fighter. He doesn't care about anything but winning.
Mm-hmm.
Checks and championships. And yet, when he's paired up with someone else, he is so good at just creating that chemistry that they keep throwing people, well, let's see how he does with this person as a partner, and then break them up and have them fight, because the chemistry is just so good. And everyone has different strengths when it comes to wrestling. Some people can connect with anyone. Some can look good in the ring no matter who they're against. Some people, you hand them a microphone, you just need to sit back and watch and they will blow you away. You know, everyone has different strengths, and my favorite thing about wrestling is, just like when you're making a movie, the audience sees it as the good guys fighting the bad guy, but when you're on the set, those people are teammates.
Yeah.
They're helping tell a story. They're trusting each other. You know, the one person knows that if they say their line one way, the other person will react accordingly. It's putting your trust in someone else to get the story out. And that's really what wrestling is. These people all have to trust each other an extreme amount.
Yeah.
And it's just very interesting the stories you can get out of that. And then there's crazy stories that have happened. There's one day we're going to have to deal with the ridiculousness that was the WWE in the late 90s, early 2000s. The Attitude Era, it was called.
Mm-hmm.
This was back before they started being family friendly. There were... Vince McMahon very much liked anything that got people talking. He said, he likes to say, we're not creating a show, we're creating moments. We're creating memories. So, like, he would do things back then that would be like, they revealed one wrestler slept with a dead woman. They this is one of the most scarring moments of my teenage years. There was this big black guy whose nickname was Sexual Chocolate, and he was a ladies' man, and he started dating this 80-year-old woman. Okay, kind of weird, but okay. Then one day she announces she's pregnant. Still really weird and doesn't seem possible, but I'm riding along. Then comes the day on Raw when she's going to give birth, and she gives birth to a rubber hand. And they're just standing around going, what's this? And Mark Henry, Sexual Chocolate, goes, oh, that's where we left that. Yeah, she was never pregnant. She had a sex toy stuck in her for months. This was wrestling back then.
All right.
And, you know, you go to the right place now, you can still find that level of craziness. It's about telling whatever stories keep people engaged. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to that, Vince McMahon has no scruples. He will tell any story as long as it gets him good publicity. Which is why you get so much variation in wrestling. And there's so much and then it swings it back to why wrestling seems to draw autistic fans.
Mm-hmm.
And when you really look at it, I mean, the WWE universe is very similar to the Marvel universe or the DC universe. There's all these characters, and they all have these special moves that they do that you, if you watch enough, you get to know them.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to go, oh, he's going to hit this thing. And you get to know the characters, and there's all these different characters. And if there's a character you don't like, well, then you wait for the next character. And then they're wearing bright, shiny costumes, and you can wear those. You can make your own version of those costumes and cosplay as them. And you know, it's a vast universe where there's, you can find whatever it is you're looking for because it has so much. That's what I think draws me.
Mm-hmm.
Is there are times that I'm just really into like wrestler outfits. Like, wow, how do they come up with them? Where, you know, when do they decide to change them up? Some wrestlers, like, have a different outfit nearly every show. Some go, like, every 4 months, you know. There's so many different things to obsess about, which is definitely something autistic people are drawn to, is something that you can think about and obsess about and really get into, and no matter how long you're in that well, you never reach the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And that is definitely true with wrestling.
Alright. Excellent. I didn't put a whole lot of thought into the costume, so I didn't pay attention to them too much.
Right, and yeah, and I've been a wrestling fan for 30 years. Mm-hmm. Of course I'm to the point of, I look at the costumes and every little aspect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I watch a show and a story, something happens in a story, and I'd say about 70% of the time I know what the next step in the story is.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen so many, I can kind of tell where they're going. Then there's the 30% of the time where, oh, nope, curveball. We're going a completely different route you didn't expect. Those are the most fun times.
Yes.
And it's the same way with comic books, you know? The good guy's going to win in the end, except for the 30% of the time when they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, especially with, so I'm not sure how, you know so little about wrestling.
I know. I hope that I will become a more interesting part of this podcast once I've seen a few more episodes here.
Well, and you will be. Well, I mean, and also, I will learn to not talk for endless minutes without stopping. that'll be an interesting thing to learn, because I've never learned it anywhere else.
I'll jump in when, yeah, I have something useful to say.
But like, WWE has their own basically Netflix, the WWE Network. Now, On the Network is basically anything that's ever happened on WWE camera, ever. And it's all there at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. You can search by wrestler. You can search by match type. You can watch specific shows. They also have original programming. They have their own wrestling shows, like NXT, which we were just watching. That is only available on the WWE Network. And you get all of their special pay-per-view shows on the network. So there really is an endless well of wrestling to watch.
All right, then.
Like, I honestly am pretty sure at this point the amount of just plain wrestling on the network is more than you could watch in a lifetime.
Wow.
Then they also have other things like Camp WWE's, an animated show by the creators of Robot Chicken. It's a bunch of wrestlers they took wrestlers, made them kids, got voice actors, and they're at camp. they have Table for Three, which is like three wrestlers who had something in common in their wrestling careers, and now they're all going to sit down for a meal and just discuss the business, and you watch it for half an hour.
Oh.
Like, there's endless things to watch, and that's just WWE. I am at this point where I watch WWE primarily because it's the most accessible. They have shows on cable TV. You have the WWE Network, and you have all of this for $9.99 a month. It's really easy, and it's got all the names of people that I remember as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
They are not my favorite company. There's a Japanese company, the biggest company in Japan, called New Japan Pro Wrestling. If I could afford their streaming service and this service, I would do that. I cannot afford both. And they, in Japan, wrestling is very, I wouldn't even say segregated as much as there's a very clear division between men's wrestling and women's wrestling. New Japan Pro Wrestling does not have any women's wrestlers. And I'm a huge fan of women's wrestling. That was the thing I hated most about wrestling growing up. And we're now at a point where it's starting to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so excited for that I kind of have to pick WWE over Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been waiting 30 years for women's wrestling to get good.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's getting good, and I have to pick between WWE, which has it, and Japanese wrestling, which doesn't. That's how I'm going to make my decision. If I had an extra $10 a month, hint, 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 subscribers, then I would get New Japan Pro Wrestling and show you New Japan Pro Wrestling, because it really is, I mean, if WWE is Marvel Comics, then Japanese wrestling is anime, and it's really good anime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that can be really fun to watch. It's also a little different. Like, people tend to be in groups, or stables, as they're called.
Mm-hmm.
Large groups of, like, 5 to 15 people that are all on a team. And it just... They sometimes show up in WWE, or, like, Undisputed Era is kind of like a small stable of three... Well, now they're four people, because Roderick Strong did join them.
Okay. All right.
A few months later, he joins them because...
Pretty sure Admiral Akbar has something to say about this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it really was... I was shocked that I didn't see it coming. I was just really enjoying the show. But there was a point where... So, after this event, they got the tag team titles, the Undisputed Era. And they were going to defend it in a triple threat against, again, Roderick Strong and a partner, Pete Dunne, and the authors of Pain. All
right.
So, you know, sometimes the story might change, but the characters don't. And right not too long before that match, one of the members of the Undisputed Era got injured. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, I'm a smart wrestling fan. I understand how these stories work. That means they're going to lose the titles at this show because one of them's injured, and Adam Cole had to take Bobby Fish's place in that match. And I was like, I'm smart. Undisputed Era is going to lose because one of them is injured. No. Roderick Strong turns on his partner, joins Undisputed Era, and now he's one of the tag team champions. So, you know, every now and then they'll throw something at you, and you're like, oh, I should have thought of that. That was good. And it's all because you watch enough that you think you see these patterns.
Mm-hmm.
All never realizing that you are still in a position of a spectator.
Yeah.
You still only see what they want you to see. They want you to be able to guess a good amount of it so that those surprises hit even harder.
Yeah.
And I keep that in mind. Oh, man, I just want to start Daniel Bryan stuff now. Because he's... I'll have to touch on it a little bit. The great story of Daniel Bryan is that he was one of those guys who was going around the world for like 15 years and then finally made it into WWE. And we'll watch the story of his ascent to the top. It is it's the most naturally occurring stories because it really just happened by, oh no, our plans need to change because some people got injured and things need to change. And also, let's use this point to listen to the fans and give them what they want for a change.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it perfectly. Shortly after that, he was forced to retire because he had too many concussions. They felt it was unsafe for him to work. WWE is currently the most strict when it comes to this sort of thing because if someone dies in the ring, that's bad publicity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to lie. That's probably their number one reason why they would keep their wrestlers as safe as possible. After over 2 years of being retired, Daniel Bryan came back to wrestling a few months ago. They thought he'd never be able to and WWE would never let him. And they finally did. And he had his first match back just a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was bawling like a freaking baby. Because sometimes it's just a matter of if you accept that real life sometimes has as crazy a stories as wrestling,
mm-hmm.
and you fit those real life stories into wrestling, it's so good.
Yes.
That's the stuff I really love. I love it all. Yeah. I keep finding myself saying, that's the thing I really love, about like 15 different times. Because really, I just really love wrestling.
You love all of it.
It is definitely my autistic focus. It is the thing that I most easily can obsess about. Like I mentioned, I'm physically disabled. I'm not able to work. I'm on Social Security, which means I am at home in my apartment almost all day, almost every day, which is very easy to go stir crazy, go nuts. If it wasn't, honestly, I would have if it wasn't for wrestling. I play the video game all day. I watch at least 8 hours of wrestling a week.
Mm-hmm.
That's the lighter weeks.
Yeah.
So, without wrestling to dive into, yeah, I don't know where I'd be. And that is another example of why it's great for autistic people is you can stick a toe in and be a casual fan.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can dive in full body. It's really a matter of how deep you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I love about wrestling.
So,
among the many other things,
I'm gonna shift gears just a little bit. But
sure.
Staying on the topic of wrestling, you were talking about how you play a lot of the video games.
Yes.
And you know, we're doing this podcast thing here. One thing that strikes me that would flow really well into this, if we start getting, you know, some listeners, is they might wanna see you play this game and commentate on it.
I'm open to it. I And this is another thing that is becoming a stereotype in the autistic community, so I'm trying not to go into it too much, but I worry that I play my wrestling game like a sandbox game. What I really love is the creation element. It's so weird that WWE has such a sandbox game. Like, obviously there are... I'm talking about when it comes to, like, Xbox console games.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very sandboxy game. Obviously, there are more sandboxy computer games that are more indie, that where you can literally stack 10 tables on top of each other and throw people through them. You can't do that in the WWE game. But you can create wrestlers. You can create their movesets.
Mm-hmm.
You can create their... how they come to the ring. You can create shows, you can create championships, you can do so much. I've considered twitching playing that game. I worry that, and this is another thing, I don't watch Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't watch other people play video games that much. I enjoy it when it's like my brother. I watch him play it. Shout out to, what is he now? Shout out to Beholder Studios, because they helped me figure out audio editing, which I'm doing after this, so I guess I shouldn't thank them yet. But
spoilers.
Yeah. But I don't watch that, so I don't know. Are there people who are interested in watching people just sandbox? Just create? Because I do that more than I actually play. But I'm willing to do both on Twitch. If people want to watch it, I'll do it.
I mean, I would say it's worth putting yourself out there to try to see if people are interested. Literally last night, or maybe it was the night before, I was awake at hours that I shouldn't have been, and so I got bored.
I went to bed at 6 this morning.
Yeah,
I did see you message me at like 2:30, and I was like, oh, weird, he's up. But I'm up too, so whatever.
So I fired up Twitch, and I wanted to see some people play Minecraft, because I was playing Minecraft at the time.
My brother does that on Beholder Studios.
Yeah. I picked a random channel, and it was... some, you know, later teenage girl over in England, I think, who was playing on a Minecraft server with one of her friends, and it was her and her friend talking over probably TeamSpeak or something like that. Not very frequently, like a comment here or there every few minutes, and, you know, like one or two word comments. And people were watching it. It wasn't just me in that channel.
This is... Alright, well then this also brings it back to... I plan to get very real in this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about autism. We're talking about how it affects me. We're talking about how it affects us.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about how it affects the community. I mentioned, I am part of that age group where I was diagnosed basically... right before my 18th birthday, which means the school's response was, okay, let's see how we can get him the hell out of the school and graduated and not care about if he learned anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up kind of pulled, where for the first 18 years of my life was pure masking and camouflaging. I'm not sure how aware of those terms you are.
Mm-hmm.
Those are terms in the autism community for basically... when someone is pretending to be neurotypical or non-autistic.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can blend in more. That was the entire first 18 years of my life, which is a very influential time in everyone's life. So I learned to do that before I knew I was doing that. The problem with it is that it takes up a lot of energy.
Mm.
You're pretending to... I mean, you're mentally putting up a mask, blocking other people from the real you. It's a constant energy suck. And so, you know, a lot of people are saying that you should try to do it less, only do it when necessary. I'm at this point where I don't have a job. I'm not going to mask for any of you fuckers. I may love you, but I can't help you if I'm pretending to be someone else. But at the same time, I have a lot that was ingrained that I don't even realize I'm doing. And it also which leads to a thing, and I've noticed this with a lot of 30-something people on the spectrum. I don't trust my own voice. I don't trust that what I'm saying is what I'm actually feeling, because I'm so used to pretending to be something I'm not. I'm not used to my voice being anything anyone wants to hear, because I spent the first 18 years of my life being taught that no one does want to hear the weird stuff that I think. No one wants to hear that. They want me to fit in and to be myself. Sorry, my cat distracted me. They want me to not be myself. They want me to fit in so they don't have to worry about, is this weirdness something we have to deal with? Is this something that's a problem? Or is this just a weird person? So I really don't trust my own voice. I've struggled with that as an artist ever since I've been an artist. Everything that I've written that is detached from me, I can finish and get done, but the second it has any personal connection, I second guess myself, I doubt myself, I end up telling myself that no one wants to hear it, or if they do, then maybe I'm not there, it's because they're hearing something that I'm not trying to say. So there's a lot of issues with that. So yeah, I've avoided doing a podcast and doing Twitch and doing all that stuff for a lot longer than I should have. And this, I'm hoping, is going to help me fight that. Help me find this community, because it really is a very recent thing that I found out that there are a lot of other autistic people who are very into wrestling. And before that, I actually did not know anyone who liked wrestling for the same things that I did. Mm-hmm. I knew people who liked wrestling, but every now and then they'd say something about, I just wish they'd go back to women wrestling in pools of mud, and I'd be like, So I always felt both uncomfortable and not at ease, even in the places I felt most comfortable. So this is still a new thing for me, feeling comfortable to say what I feel and that there will be other people who want to hear it. Mm-hmm. That is a brand new sensation for me. I'm trying to embrace it.
Excellent. Excellent.
So yeah, we will be getting into Twitch. If anyone out there plays 2K18 on the Xbox One, and you can do a search for Kobe number 9, the word number, and then the number 9. It made sense when I made it. or you could also look, let's see, what is a creation I've made that no one else has? Well, you can look for Cheeseburger. Cheeseburger is the only male wrestler I've made. I'm going to have to show you Cheeseburger is a wrestler in the indie scene who weighs about 120 pounds. Okay. And I'm not even sure why his name is Cheeseburger. I think they just gave him that nickname because he liked cheeseburgers, and then it stuck. But, like, he is smaller than some wrestlers' arms.
Dear.
But he is so... Because of that, he's so fun to watch, because you instinctively have to root for him.
Right.
He is always the underdog you have to cheer for. But anyway, so yeah, look, if you like that stuff, download it or whatever. I'm playing all the time. I'll look into Twitching. I think I could do that. As a tie-in.
Yeah. If nothing else, I mean, if you want to dip your toe into that, I mean, I've got my Twitch account, and
I have a Twitch account. Because, again, and I will eventually take the time to thank all the inspirational people who inspired me to do this, but WrestleSplania did a Twitch, and I was like, I've never seen a Twitch. And then I got into the Twitch, and I'm like, this is fun. You know, this is so much fun, I'm going to give them money. And it's so easy to give people money on Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up doing stuff that I'd never... that I'd been afraid to dip my toe in before, because I am the type of person who does not stay with one toe in. I either take my foot out or I dive all in.
Mm-hmm.
So I tend to stop myself from dipping a toe into things, to stop myself from getting too immersed into something. It's a constant juggling act.
Yeah.
'Cause it's hard to find things you like if you're never trying anything. It's really hard to enjoy things when you know that if you don't watch it, you will not eat for multiple days because of it, which I have done.
Mm-hmm.
Because of wrestling. And I've done for other things too. I'm definitely that type of person. There's this new thing that's being talked about in the autism community, maladaptive daydreaming. And I heard about it and I was like, oh, that thing that I've always done that has a name? It's it's basically like, imagine daydreaming.
Mm-hmm.
Now imagine the in-between between daydreaming and like imaginary friends. So you know you're daydreaming, but you're talking and interacting with them in real space, even though they're not there, and you know they're not there.
Mm-hmm.
But you're treating them like they're there. And then the mal part comes from, you know, it gets in the way of real life.
Yeah.
If I had a real life to get in the way of, then I would have, then I do that all the time. I often sit and pretend that I'm talking to people who aren't there and audibly have the conversation.
I've done that a number of times,
yeah,
myself.
So I know that there is a point. Like, if I decided, you know what, I'm going to watch Japanese wrestling, I'm going to watch any wrestling that I'm interested in, you're not going to see me for a few months. I already know that once I can afford this, the New Japan's streaming site, oh boy, I'm going to have so much back stuff to watch. People aren't going to see me for a while. I'm going to have so much Okada and Shinsuke. Oh, Shinsuke Nakamura. I have no sexuality in real life, but if Shinsuke Nakamura ever came around to me, I would... Yeah.
What's that?
I'm a Nakamura sexual. Whoo boy. Just something about him. And he's married, so it's not going to happen, and I accept that, but whoo boy. Something about him.
Moving on then.
Yeah, so we don't see him. Yeah. Yeah, one day I'll like... I don't have it currently planned. I have like 6 episodes based on great wrestling stories that can be told in like 4 matches. But one day, maybe we'll do a podcast episode about the video game and how, mm-hmm, I use that. 'Cause like, you're in my game. I've made you.
Sweet.
I've made some other friends of mine and family members, and I made myself. I have a whole character. My name is not Kobe Feldman. It is Cobias Orpheus.
Nice.
You know, Oh, sometimes I think it out and I'm like, I should write wrestling, and then I'm like, I think I should because I've never done it. And so I think that what I'm doing is good, but it's probably not. Oh, geez, I just remembered a tangent I missed. Holy crap, Kobe.
Mm-hmm.
Way back when I started bringing up Daniel Bryan,
mm-hmm,
it was because... Maybe I can splice this together so it makes sense. I had said something about how we have to remember that we are seeing things from a spectator perspective.
Right.
So Daniel Bryan came back to wrestling after 2 years, and a lot of fans instantly were afraid he's going to die in the ring. And you know what? He might. It's possible. We don't, I mean, we know some of what his medical issues were, but we don't know the full extent. But we, as fans, I hear a lot of fans saying, like, oh, if he hits this move, he's going to hurt himself. I'm sorry, you've never wrestled a day in your life. I kind of realized that only through Daniel Bryan, because it's medical, and because I have medical issues that are invisible, that people can't see. I've parked in handicapped spots with my placard and still gotten yelled at for parking in a handicapped spot. People assume they know things about other people that they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a real turning point with me with Daniel Bryan and learning that, oh, I think I know everything about wrestling. These are people called smarks. A mark is, you know, like in carny terminology, a mark is someone who buys into everything.
Okay.
So if you buy into wrestling, if you're cheering every good guy and booing every bad guy, you're a mark. If you love wrestling, but you see through the bullshit, man, I read the online rumors. I know what's going on. I know the backstage dirt. Those people are called smarks, and they are somewhat annoying because I would say they are, like, and I used to be one. I'd say their ability to predict what's going to happen is maybe 5% higher than the people who are just fans. Like, they think they know stuff. And you know what? They probably do know more than other people, but they don't know the important things. They don't know what it's like to be a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what, like, there's a wrestler that we'll get to named Roman Reigns, who every adult male hates because they don't think he deserves the spot to be the top person because he's not that good in the ring. Again, gatekeeper stuff. Meanwhile, women and kids love him because he is fine. Like, I'm not that into him, but I can't deny he is really good looking. And so it kind of creates this issue where men who are more likely to be smarks are like, oh, he's just getting ahead because he's pretty. And you know what? That's probably part of it. I mean, he's going to sell tickets to all those women when an ugly, great wrestler isn't going to sell those tickets.
Mm-hmm.
It's about selling the tickets. But also, they talk like, oh, he hasn't earned it. He doesn't deserve it. And it's like, you can't know that from the outside. That is the type of thing you can't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, there are wrestlers who have been around decades longer than this guy. There are guys who are smoother in the ring and can do other moves better. We still don't know what the metric of earning and deserving a world title shot is. Because first of all, I'm sorry to tell you all this. Wrestling's fake. I know. It's not real. The champion is not the best. The person who's not on TV isn't the worst. It's just an ebb and flow kind of thing. And even if you're at the top or at the bottom, they don't see that as the top or bottom necessarily. It's about putting on the best show.
Mm-hmm.
It's about getting people to come see the shows. So if they say, yeah, if other wrestlers are saying, yeah, he deserves the shot, he's earned it, then it's pretty arrogant to say, no, I've been a fan for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you something. This guy hasn't earned it.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of an asshole thing. That's the same as the person telling me that I'm not handicapped when I have a placard.
Yeah.
Like, no, the person who decides this has already decided.
Yeah.
you're not part of that process. I'm sorry you don't like you're not part of that process. But you're not part of that process. And that's something I see a lot in wrestling fandom and was starting to turn me away.
Mm-hmm.
Were those types of fans. But yeah, it's all about finding your people in the subset. I'm just talking so much.
That is fine. the only thing I can add to that is, you know, my community is my thing up to this point has been computers.
Yeah.
I live and breathe computers. I work with computers at work. I come home, I work with computers. And one of the things I'm really interested in is the Linux operating system, or Linux kernel, if you want to be a jerk about it. but just you know, Linux distributions as operating systems as a whole. And it used to be in the early 2000s, late 90s, there was a huge gatekeeper base. You ask a question and you had not thoroughly read that manual, you were going to hear about it. And now a lot of that community has shifted to where a lot of those people who were very gatekeepy they're pushed to the background, and now it's about asking good questions. As long as you can ask a question in a good manner, it doesn't matter if it's in the manual or not. Asked a good question.
And I don't want to say that this is a rule or in any way backed by anyone other than my own personal experiences. But I notice a lot of the gatekeeperiness in people who are 30 or older, male, and show autistic traits but have never been diagnosed. Because they have these issues of... people on the autism spectrum are very rule-based. When they have a rule in their head, it is a rule, and it can be very difficult when you've created a rule and are on the autism spectrum to then realize, oh, no, that's not a rule, it's an idea. And I see that a lot. I mean, I go to an autism group therapy. I talk a lot to people online, and I notice a lot of similarities in the ways autistic people look at rules and the way gatekeepers man their gates. They have this idea of the way things should be that may or may not be based on any real idea of what is or isn't good, but in the end, you are placing rules on another person, which is never a good idea. For example, I use Microsoft and Windows, and we're doing that all here now, and I know you really hate that. But you don't care what I'm doing.
Right, yeah.
That is a good way to see things. If you have a rule for yourself, okay. In my life, I'm trying really hard to break down as many of those as possible because they've been very harmful to me. But just like how I wouldn't put any rules on another person, I wouldn't put lack of rules on another person. It's when people expect other people to follow their rules.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about like rules about how to like something. I'm not talking about. I want to make clear that I'm not equating this to political correctness and saying, well, you should get to say whatever you want to say because blah, blah, blah. No, because you already know you're hurting someone when you do that. That's different. If you're hurting people, you're doing something wrong. That is the way to like something wrong, is if you're hurting people. And that's basically it. Otherwise, you can like things however you want to like them. And that is a very, very firmly held belief on my part.
I agree wholeheartedly. One more comment on that is not wrestling related. I apologize, but that's where I'm at right now.
As long as we have a relationship with autism and we're the ones talking, we're not off topic.
Okay.
I'm deciding that now, because otherwise I'm gonna just drive myself insane about saying the wrong thing.
Well, I was watching someone I like to watch on Twitch, and she was having problems with her microphone, and I had made a comment, and I just meant it in kind of like an offhanded way, and I was like, well, we'll just blame Windows Audio for this. And I meant it to be funny, because I have had some pretty horrible experiences with Windows Audio, and I just meant it as a funny thing. And I don't want to say she got defensive about it, but she made that comment to try and head off the gatekeepiness. So she said, you know, yeah, I like Windows and the familiarity. You know, Microsoft sucks, but I like Windows and the familiarity and everything. I've never been a big enough nerd to get into Linux. I know I'm probably doing nerding wrong, but there it is, or whatever. And I was like, oh, I have gone too far. And so my response to that was to make sure to say, you know, no, you're nerding right, because you're nerding at all.
Yes, that is something that I had a lot of problems with, where I would not nerd because I felt like I was doing things wrong, or I wouldn't do anything because I felt like I was doing them wrong, because I always assumed I was doing things wrong because I assumed there was a right.
Mm-hmm.
And when you spend 18 years not knowing why you're different, and especially with my story of going, I had to go to doctor after doctor after doctor. I was on antidepressants. I was on ADHD medication. I was on mood stabilizers. They tried everything before they finally found what it was. And so that meant 18 years of being told, well, what you're doing is wrong. We need to figure out how it's wrong. We need to figure out specifically what's wrong. We need to figure out what's wrong with you. And I'm lucky that I have really great parents, and I'm very spoiled and privileged in that way. But it's very easy when someone thinks of the world as a set of rules, and to be regularly be told that something is wrong with them, then the rule becomes that they are wrong, other people are right, and that is quite the minefield to have in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that a lot, especially on the autism spectrum, especially people close to my age on the autism spectrum, of constantly not knowing what right is because they assume that there is a right and a wrong. And I think we do need to be better at accepting different ways of thinking.
That's what I've got.
All right. Well, I want to thank people who have helped inspire the creation of this podcast. The people of WrestleSplania, Cap Arbadero, and Rachel Millman. Also Sarah Kerchick. For those who don't know, she is an autistic writer and activist in Canada who I started following. I saw some awesome things about her on TV during Autism Acceptance Month. And then after I followed her for a while, she started tweeting wrestling stuff. And that's really how I found that there is this autistic wrestling community. She's already tweeted that she is really looking forward to this podcast. So I'm very happy, that she is an inspiration to this and that she's excited. So Sarah Kerchick, I mentioned WrestleSplania. Thanking my brother, Yoshi Feldman of Beholder Studios. Thank him for helping with editing, unless this sounds like crap, in which case, hey, it's his fault. Go to Beholder Studios, yell at him. special thanks to Ben Cannon for making our logo. All right, and that will just about do it. So, yeah, that will be the first episode of Wrestling with Autism. Thank you very much. Like and subscribe, and whatever that stuff that I don't do for all the podcasts that I listen to is. Yeah.